from Los Angeles, this is Bruce Dubon with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republicans Tim Kelly, Charles Moran, Karen Sigmund, and Mark Viviades. Our program tonight coming to you from the Westwood One Studios in beautiful Culver City, California, where our toll-free lines are now open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, the email address is brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you want to tweet us a comment, it's @Dumo. And our promise to you, one of my resolutions for 2015 is to take more email messages and more tweets, so @Dumo or brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. That is where you can go. If you miss a show each and every week, you can go there and watch it, and we keep it for many, many years. In fact, some of our guests this evening probably could go back and watch their most recent appearance on this broadcast, because for the next several weeks, we will be here at Culver City working out of Westwood One in California. And again, tonight, as we look forward to 2 hours of discussion, you heard me mention in the opening, all of our guests this evening are Republicans. But they may not all agree on the same thing, because what I want to ask them and ask everyone listening from coast to coast is, as you look at the Republican Party in Washington, which is about to take control of the United States Senate, continue and expand its base within the House of Representatives, with the number of Republican governors standing at 29, more than any time in recent history, state legislatures all over the country, a majority of them now controlled by Republicans in both chambers. This is a tremendous opportunity for the Republican Party as a brand. And tonight I want to talk about the branding of the Republican Party, some might say the relaunch of the Republican Party. And we do so, when we begin that discussion, with sort of a big story that broke late last night, and that is Mike Huckabee, who has spent the last several years as a talk show host on Fox Television, but had some degree of success at the polls as a Republican presidential candidate, announcing that he is stepping aside from his Fox News responsibilities and raising certainly the possibility that very soon in the spring he is likely to announce once again that he's going to seek the Republican nomination. Tim Kelly, let's begin by talking about Mike Huckabee. What does Mike Huckabee's potential entry into the race, what does it mean for the rest of the field in your view?
I think it's serious because Mike Huckabee was an extremely successful governor, and Bill Clinton said he's one of the best politicians that he's ever met. When he was governor of Arkansas, the Democrats still controlled the legislature, and he was able to work with across the aisle and do a very, very successful job as governor. So people who think of him as a media personality are missing the fact that he's got chops. He's been a real governor of a tough state. He knows how to play the game. He knows how to work across the aisle. And he's a compassionate conservative, which is a valuable thing to be.
Mark Viviades, what is your comment on that as chairman of the Los Angeles County Republican Party?
I'm not impressed by Huckabee. He's kind of a lackluster candidate. I don't think he's very dynamic. He's basically a nice guy. But we're not looking for that kind of a candidate right now. I think we're looking for someone who's more dynamic, who's going to – I mean, do you really know where Huckabee stands on many of the issues? I think the answer is kind of no. I think Huckabee being in the race might help maybe the more conservative candidates, because he may be fighting against someone like a Jeb Bush. So that's how the race may kind of lay out.
Charles Moran, head of the Log Cabin Republicans in the state of California, welcome.
Thank you.
Your comment.
My concern with Mike Huckabee is that I do think that he's a strong candidate. And in this kind of situation, I think he can absolutely go the distance. And just what Mark said, it is a race. I think that he has a core dedicated group of people that are going to help continue and propel him through the longest stages of the race that he can get himself through. But at the same time, there are definitely some pitfalls. And one of them is the fact he will not be the only social conservative in the race. And again, how are people like Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum going to differentiate themselves And again, redefine what it means to be a modern Christian conservative in an everly increasing world where people are, you know, looking at the role of religion and society and morality as it pertains to politics.
Karen Sigmund.
I think, you know, as you mentioned, Bruce, this is a tremendous opportunity to remake the brand of the Republican Party and to shine and really move forward. And to me, Mike Huckabee's entrance into the race is, in a sense, a big step back. I think we really need to look forward and not back. And while he may be an interesting candidate and may help conservatives, I'd rather see all kinds of other people represent the Republican brand rather than Mike Huckabee.
As you look at the Republican primary race, I mean, and we've got at least, you know, a dozen people whose names we will discuss, maybe more, if people want to call in and add some names to that list. But someone brought up, you know, Rick Santorum. It seems to me that Huckabee sort of freezes Rick Santorum out because as a proven vote getter, with at least the Christian base of the party, Huckabee probably is the stronger of the two candidates, isn't he?
One of the things I want to make a quick differentiation on is the fact that we'll use the term conservative, and we need to be cognizant about the way we do that because Mike Huckabee is a social conservative. He is not a fiscal conservative.
I agree with that.
And we have to be very, very clear about that when we talk about
that. That's what hurt him last time.
And that's what hurt him last time.
Because you raised a lot of taxes in Arkansas.
He did. And I think that actually Rick Santorum is more pragmatic when it comes to some of these issues, but Mike Huckabee is not. But Mike Huckabee is also an ordained minister. Rick Santorum is not. So you really have to know who some of these people are before you go too far into it and know who their history and their past is. The problem is that both Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum are echoes of of elections past. And we really, in the Republican Party, have to be looking forward to a new generation.
I agree. And if we're going to remake ourselves, he's the opposite of what we want to make ourselves into. We want somebody who's fiscally conservative.
Correct.
Not socially conservative.
But again, where everyone will focus their attention, the national media will focus their attention on, okay, who can win Iowa? Well, Santorum has won Iowa, and so has Huckabee.
You know, I want to jump – again, this is Charles, and I'm sorry for jumping in. I really just want to even discount the role that even Iowa is going to have in this.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the Republican Party has made it very clear, and I don't want to step on the chairman's toes here because he's privy to a little of this more information than I am. But I think it was clear after the last presidential election, the Republican National Committee really did sit down and say, okay, what did we do wrong? And one of the things – there was a list of things, and I will – absolutely give credit to here in California, or Reince Priebus as the national chairman, but also our three members that we have, Chairman Jim Brulte, Sean Steele, and Linda Ackerman, who are national men, committee men and women, to really tighten up those rules. This presidential election will be the first one, I think, for Republicans where it will not be dominated by, and the decision and the candidates will not be decided by an 18th century, 19th century, 20th century way of electing a president.
I want to get Tim's response to that and also everyone's response. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. 1-800-723-8289. Look into the crystal ball. We're charting the future of the Republican Party, whether the brand has to be changed. Mike Huckabee got roughed up a little bit in this first segment. If you are a Mike Huckabee fan, let's hear from you. Bruce Dumont from Coast to Coast and Border to Border tonight live from Culver City, California.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
From Boston to Bakersfield, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Give us a buzz. But, Tim, you were making some very cogent points during the break, and I want you to put them on the air because you were talking about you were giving a different, more expansive view of the power of Mike Huckabee's appeal.
Mike Huckabee is a Southern populist, and he has an ability to reach out to working class white voters who the Democrats have thrown over the side. I mean, they're laying there, and if he goes after him, he can be very persuasive. So I wouldn't underestimate Governor Huckabee at all. And as I said,
he's a Christian who's also showbiz. He's very comfortable with musicians and politicians,
Bruce,
and entertainers.
And it's not showbiz. It's being a minister. That's what they train you. That's his original profession, speaking to the people.
What I'm just saying is that, that he has that. To me, as a Republican, he's the closest. This could be the kiss of death for this guy. He's the closest thing to Bill Clinton insofar as someone who can, I think, really say, I feel your pain.
You know, Bruce, that's a good point because generally, Southern conservatives don't necessarily play well in the Northeast, even to Republicans. And Huckabee will. He's a lot more refined.
He's also liked by the media.
Liked by the media. He's got that showbiz quality, as you mentioned. So yeah, he could be very strong.
Let's now talk about the 10,000-pound gorilla in the room, and that's Jeb Bush. Let me go around the table with each of you. We'll start with you, Karen. When George Bush said, or Jeb Bush said that he was, you know, thinking of running for president, which surprised no one.
Right.
How does that affect or disrupt the procedure for selecting the next Republican nominee?
Well, I think generally speaking, we do know that most of the big money is already flowing to him. So just that in itself, follow the money. And it's, you know, when I heard, as you said, no surprise to anybody that he was considering running. First of all, we knew he was way past considering. And I just heard a collective sigh among everybody. A groan among everybody I know that, please, can we not do this? Exactly as with, you know, you had said, we've turned the clock back. Jeb Bush is turning the clock back also.
Is it just because of his name, Mark? And do you agree with Karen's assessment?
Well, not only his name, but he's the Bushes have a certain philosophy, and I think his time to run was when his brother ran. Mm-hmm. And now it's past the time when a Bush should be running. And I think even the Republicans, the rank-and-file Republicans, are kind of through.
What is it that he believes that you don't?
He's just generally not as conservative. Mm-hmm. He's kind of a more wishy-washy Republican, kind of more of a Republican that wants to get along with the Democrats and reach across the aisle, which is something that Republicans right now do not want to
Tim?
Do.
I think his orientation is different than almost anybody else. I think he's the one guy running who is oriented to this hemisphere. And his brother, before 9/11, wanted to be the president that integrated America and the hemisphere, and then 9/11 blew that away. I think that's a strong part of it. The other part that he has is that Florida and Texas, you know, are owned by his family, and that's a huge part of the country to lock up right off the bat. He's locked up two critical states, and that makes it tough. Now, whether he's really got the fire in his belly, I don't know.
Does he do that with Rick Perry and possibly Ted Cruz in the race? I mean, let's just talk a little bit about Texas politics. I mean, who really controls Texas politics?
I think there's I do want to talk about Jeb, but we'll talk about Texas here for a second.
Sure.
Because I work in this field, I know there is enough money in Texas to support Ted Cruz, Rick Perry, and Jeb Bush. They are all distinct donor crews in the state of Texas. And Mike Huckabee, but again, for people who have the solid Texas ties. From Jeb's side, again, it is very much what Tim said. You know, being a president that is looking in a different direction, I do think that he's going to be a very strongly domestically focused president. We saw he did very good things to education when he was governor. He, you know, what he did to ratchet down the size of government in the state of Florida when he was governor, you know, fluently speaks Spanish. This is what I love. None of the Democratic potential candidates, Hillary Clinton, Brian Schweitzer, Martin O'Malley, Andrew Cuomo, none of them speak Spanish. And Jeb Bush will be able to go directly in front of the voters and not get – and I've again, as a consultant, I've seen what the Spanish news channels do in translation and in these interviews. And Jeb Bush will be able to talk directly to the most important growing voter demographic, unfiltered, untranslated.
Regarding common regarding Jeb Bush, isn't he in favor of Common Core? And that is not going to play well in Republican
circles.
Was,
Common Core wasn't an issue, you know, 15 years ago when he was governor. So I think he's going to have to reinvent or come up with a more contemporary version of what his domestic plans would be. But then
but again, if we're looking at the math, and obviously looking at campaigns, it's all about looking at the math and the money. I mean, if you have five or six conservatives or varying degrees of social conservatives running, doesn't he emerge as the moderate, even though he may not view himself as a moderate? He certainly is the most moderate in that group, maybe with the exception of Chris Christie.
There's the old school and the new school, and we've kind of talked about it with, you know, the Santorum, the Huckabee, et cetera, and then there's different versions of them, you know, currently thinking about running. And one of the things that Tim brought up was, you know, the Mike Huckabee populism. And I think we have that candidate that's a new school candidate, and that's Chris Christie. And I think that he excites people in a way that Jeb Bush does not. He turns people on in a way that Jeb Bush doesn't. You've got the old school Ron Paul. You've got the new school Rand Paul, you know, a little younger. A little more contemporary, but brings a whole host of different
things. Well, how about
things.
If we talk about a guy that's won three elections in 4 years, and that's Scott Walker. Isn't he, to me, Scott Walker and John Kasich have emerged as the hot properties, even though they aren't necessarily always mentioned in the top three, Tim?
They're from the Midwest, and they're media starved. The New York and L.A. and Atlanta don't cover them very much. And so they have a much longer row to hoe, even though both of them have extremely good records as governors, and they're tough enough for the job. But it coming from the Midwest is kind of like coming out of a media fog. But to withstand
what Scott Walker withstood in three elections, certainly two of the three elections, where the National Democratic Progressive Labor Coalition, he was to be crucified.
Scott Walker, really on paper, not only on paper, he's got credentials.
Oh, yeah.
He's a governor. He, as you said, he withstood the attacks of the unions. The only thing is he needs to be trained to be a little more
fun. It's a little boring.
Tough. He is tough. Going up against the unions, he's tough, but he needs to be perceived as tough the way Chris Christie is. If he had some lessons to be a little more like Chris Christie in front of a crowd, Scott Walker would be the guy to beat.
Is Chris Christie, in your view, Karen, is he too moderate to be the nominee?
Chris Christie, too moderate. I don't know that he's too moderate. To me, he's really a one-trick pony. His only stance that was conservative that I saw at all was to do with the education unions. In no other arena was he really conservative Republican anyway. Is that a moderate stance? He is a wild, very charismatic, kind of fun, and brings a lot of engagement to conversation. But as far as being a viable candidate in the presidential race, I just don't see it.
Another name that we have not mentioned, and I'm going to come back to you because the last time or one of the previous times you were on this program, when you were dividing up, you said there aren't two or three Republican parties. There's about five of them. And the race for president will be about who is the winner of each of those, almost like a football playoff. And you made a very strong case then that the one who is most likely to be able to pick up a little piece of each of those five sectors was Rick Perry.
Right.
Do you still believe in that? And if so, repeat what you said, because it was brilliant then, and you still think it's brilliant now. And I want to find out whether we have any agreement on the brilliance.
What did I say that was brilliant? I do see us, the Republicans, those on the right, as divided into a number of factions. It's not as simple as it once seemed. We have the Tea Party. We have the Libertarians. We have moderate. We have social conservatives. I'm sure I've left people out. And it did strike me that Governor Rick Perry, who has dealt with so many of the consequences of what our president has left us to deal with, immigration, Obamacare, just one thing after another. Rick Perry has been on the forefront of almost every one of those battles. And it does seem to me that he has appeal for every group, every one of those groups.
Charles, what do you think?
I wouldn't necessarily – I love the diversity of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. The factionalism is something that wears on me greatly because I am literally involved in hand-to-hand combat on a daily basis with this. Mark just has experienced a big dose of that. I love the diversity of the Republican Party. But I don't necessarily think that somebody who hits, like, you know, a little bit from every part, I don't think that that's a winning formula. And it is really a formula. And that's why we, you know, we can't be, you know, we can be objective about it. But there's different ways to get to the finish line. And I think that formula doesn't end up working out in the end. And that's why I don't think, you know, Rick Perry, it's kind of like, okay, well, who are you and where did you come from and what do you really stand for? You know, what camp do you occupy? Because you're not really sure on any of this. It's just kind of like a little, you know, with Jeb, you know what you got. With Christie, you know what you got. With, you know, Huckabee, you know what you got. But with Rick Perry, you're kind of like, who are you and why are you doing this again?
Tim, once again, you are on deck to get your first comment when we continue in the next segment. 1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border. Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, John Kasich, Scott Walker, Rick Perry. We haven't talked about Bobby Jindal yet. Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Paul Ryan, Mike Pence, Mitt Romney. Haven't talked about any of those. Mike Huckabee, Santorum, Ben Carson. Back shortly from Chicago. Or, I'm sorry, from Culver City. Bye.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City, California. Nice to have you with us. 1-800-723-8289. We've got great guests around the table, and we're going to let them introduce themselves. And don't be bashful. Tell us a little bit about who you are, a little bit about your background. Mark Viviades.
I'm chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County, the largest county party in the country. I'm formerly from Massachusetts and involved with the Republican Party there. I also am involved with the Hollywood Republicans and that crowd.
And there are many Hollywood Republicans?
There are many Hollywood Republicans, but not that many that will actually come out and admit it so that their careers aren't destroyed.
Will they put their name on a donor list?
Many will not. Unfortunately, many will not.
Karen Sigmund, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm from California. I was, for almost 20 years, I was a scientist during the Cold War. Then I became an educator, and now I run an organization called Rage Against the Media.
Charles Moran.
I am Charles Moran. I am the chairman of California Log Cabin Republicans. Log Cabin is the nation's oldest and largest advocacy and volunteer organization that supports LGBTers and their advocates and our role in the Republican Party and the community. I'm a political consultant by trade. I do political and nonprofit fundraising consulting from local to national races, and also have a media practice. And I actually do believe in what I do. I'm an executive committee member of the California Republican Party. I've been a delegate to the county party. I'm a proud Los Angeles Republican Party member and one of the million, and enjoy what I do.
A quick question, follow-up with you.
Mm-hmm.
When you identify yourself as a gay Republican,
mm-hmm.
how does that play with people that you probably engage with on a regular basis who may disagree with your politics?
There are people on the in the
I'm generally well received within the party because I can establish my conservative credentials of supporting individual responsibility, personal freedom, and a strong national defense, smaller government. On the left, it's a little bit of a question mark because they're like, well, how do you balance that out? And I do believe that a true conservative in all those aspects that I just stated would support a return to individual responsibility and personal freedom. So I use my role and my mouthpiece to doing this show and other things to communicate that to the larger LGBT audience that you have a home in the Republican Party.
If there are, as I mentioned to Mark, mm-hmm. if there are closeted Republicans in the Hollywood establishment, are there closeted Republicans in the gay life in California?
More so than you'd ever believe. And some of the stats we talk about is that President Bush the first time received 25% of the LGBT vote. He received 20% of the vote the second time. John McCain kind of peaked out in the low 30s. The LGBT community votes for Republicans more than African Americans, Latinos, and Jews. Yet the Republican Party doesn't spend the type of time and attention they should communicating our values and helping refine those values. And that's part of what I do is help the party and help the community, realize that you have options.
Tim Kelly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a fourth generation native Californian, and I've been following California politics for, more than 50 years and seen a lot of changes. I'm a Navy Vietnam veteran, and I worked in campaigns before and after the Navy and had a career in political direct mail. I've worked with people in both parties in my job. So I know quite a bit about California politics, and I am absolutely astounded at the changes we're seeing constantly. But, that's the way California has always been.
And before the break, you were about to make a point to answer a question. We had to go to a break.
We were talking about the Bushes. Mm-hmm. And the Bush family, I said, is sort of like the Gambinos. I mean, they have to make their bones. They have a big bench, and there's a huge team that when the Bush dynasty coalesces, as they appear to be behind Jeb, that brings enormous influence with them. Texas, Florida, the Yale connection. In finance, in petroleum, in energy, they have got credibility, and not just here; they've got international credibility because Rupert Murdoch will take calls from a Bush. Mm-hmm. So this makes them very, very powerful. But we have to make sure, and we don't know at this point. Does Jeb really have that fire in his belly? Mm-hmm. He very well may. But
does Barbara still have it? I mean, Barbara has given us some mixed signals as to whether Mama Bush is.
I think
all
she was very.
This.
I think she was appalled at what they did to George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. He was pulverized, and
right.
I don't know if she thinks Jeb has the rhinoceros hide necessary to do this. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton did. I don't know if Hillary's got the rhinoceros hide. W. did, but. Does Jeb? I don't know.
Charles, you made some comment before we went on the air. We're talking about the power of the Bush name, and you have done some professional work for George P. Bush, who ran for agriculture.
Texas Land Commissioner.
Texas, which is a big job.
Which is a big job in Texas.
But it was
still
a low visibility job.
I've been.
But it got him a great spread with George Stephanopoulos.
Well, I was a part of the Bush family fundraising operation. I did President Bush's reelection fundraising here in Los Angeles in 2003 and 2004. I did his first reelection fundraiser here at the Century Plaza, which was, at 21 years old, having 60 people working for you and, doing a dinner like that was insane. It was one of the hallmarks of my profession so far. I have seen, and given that my profession is to help identify, candidates and donors and bring them together and coordinate these things. With all these other candidates, they go on these trips where they go meet donors and they go introduce themselves and kind of like a get-to-know-you session, kind of like a speed dating world. With the Bush world, and I'll say this is also with the Clinton world, it's an on-off switch. It's either on or it's off. There's no spool-up time. When you hear about Rick Perry coming out to California all the time, that's so he can meet people and it spools you up. And when you saw, you know, Bruce, you've told stories about how you've, you know, ran into Chris Christie in random places here in California. They're out here to meet people and to meet donors. Here, everybody know, the donor community knows who they are, and that's one of the strengths of the Clinton name and also the Bush name, is people don't need to get to know them. It's on or off. And, you know, even if you look at some of the campaign finance reports that George, you know, from George P., and he raised a significant amount of money nationally, it would be a joke to think that he didn't lean on his family name to do that. And, you know, again, these are people who have grown up with this kid. They remember when he was knee-high, and now he's running for office, and they will be there to support. It's a continuing investment and commitment to that family and what they believe in and who they are. And that is an on and off switch, and it is very powerful in an election where it is going to be predicted that this presidential election is going to cost over $2 billion. You don't get that in $25 chunks.
Let's move on to some of the other names that we've not talked about. Going to the break, I mentioned, Marco Rubio. We haven't talked about him at all. Bobby Jindal, Paul Ryan. We talked briefly about Ted Cruz, and we even talked briefly about Rand Paul. My question to you is there any of the lesser known or less discussed names like the ones I've just mentioned, although certainly Rand Paul has been discussed a lot. And I think we should put, you know, Mitt Romney in that list. Is there anybody from that second tier? I hate to use that term, but that second tier that really we should be talking more seriously about. I mean, if we had this conversation 3 years ago, it would have been Marco Rubio. That's all we would have been talking about was Marco Rubio.
I think Bobby Jindal is a name that we may be hearing a lot more from. I hope so, in fact. He's dynamic. He's one of the smartest people out there. He's done a fabulous job at what he's done. He's started to stand up more as an opposing voice to a lot of things coming out of Washington. And I think if we see more of that, he's really going to rise to the top.
I definitely agree with that. If you've seen Bobby Jindal speak recently as compared to 2 years ago, it's almost as though he's taken some lessons in speaking and being dynamic. He's got great credentials as a governor. And I think it's, you know, being a governor is the best farm team to become a president. He's got that. He did great things in Louisiana. And, again, he sounds fantastic now when he speaks.
When you walk into a room, and, again, as you say, you turn the on-off switch, and, you know, when it's Bush money or Clinton money, it comes automatically. But in every campaign, regardless of what party, there is someone that comes who doesn't have the ability to just flip the switch. They flip the switch when they walk into a room and the electricity comes from what they have to say and who they are. And we talk, it might have been Chris Christie. Is Ted Cruz at this moment, is he the guy in this list that I've just gone through? Is he the guy who makes people start bouncing off the walls by basically what he says and the power of his personality and his words? Karen.
It's a great point that you bring up. I was just so lucky to be at a Ted Cruz event. There were about a dozen people. That's all.
A dozen people.
That is it. And he's not electrifying in a way that we're used to, but his intelligence is palpable. He listens very carefully to what everybody has to say. He is so well-read, well-versed, well-informed about all the major issues, and everything he says, you just find yourself nodding. This is the guy. Not only that, in these kinds of encounters, but when he speaks to large groups, he is electrifying. He is one of the best voices opposing what's going on in Washington right now.
A couple of weeks ago, when the president signed the papers or announced he was going to make the immigration changes, mm-hmm. Ted Cruz went on the floor of the Senate, and I'm at home flipping, and I catch C-SPAN, and there's Ted Cruz in English giving the general accusation at the beginning of Cicero's oration against Catiline, and he's giving it, and I'm going back to high school 50 years, and you know, quousque tandem abutere, Catalina. I couldn't believe it. The guy is truly an intellectual. But, I mean, there I was. I knew every word. I'd had it in both English and Latin. However, that's the problem with Ted Cruz.
And I'm going to tell you more about that when we come back. Back shortly from Culver City, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us in Culver City this evening. 1-800-723-8229. A couple of segments ago, Charles Moran, you were making the point that Iowa you do not believe in. Again, this program is heard in Iowa. So if there's people from the Hawkeye State that want to come in and challenge this, you do not think that Iowa is going to have the importance that it has had traditionally for the last 10 presidential cycles. Why not?
I do. Part of the reason is that Iowa in this process of the caucus is an extremely intensive role. And I know that a lot of people in states, have consistently, when we didn't have the media and the communication mechanisms that we do now, really did look to, Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina to kind of like be the people who are going to pay attention to select that candidate. And, to succeed in Iowa, you've got to have a huge operation and knock on every door in all 99 counties. And you've got to really get in there and work that machine. That's not practical because you really are running, 50-state solution a lot of times. You're running an international campaign where at any point in time, anybody in any state can pull up where your, issues are and hear you speak about it directly. I don't think that Iowa is going to have the type of prominence that it's had in the past. It has not been a successful predictor of candidates in the past. Michelle Bachmann was, one of the fastest to rise and fall, and she did so well in the last Iowa caucus. I respect the role that, these early states have had.
What about New Hampshire?
I personally like New Hampshire's politics better than I do Iowa. That's a personal point of preference. But even then, this process is going to be so condensed, and this is one of the things that the RNC did, is they compressed the timeline as to not let these races get out of control and to not let super PAC sugar daddies artificially prolong this
process. When you say compressed, can you be specific about
it? I think the presidential campaign is really only going to be 4 or 5 months at the latest, and there are states like California whose primaries are going to fall out of the window. I believe, truly, we're going to know who the candidate is at the end of May. Granted, California's election's in June, but I believe that this decision
Has gone for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
you haven't been decisive since Goldwater.
Well,
really.
But this is going to be different because the RNC is going to sanction the debates. The RNC is going to control the timeline, and if you schedule your primaries, which state parties are allowed to do, outside of the window that the RNC has set, then they're going to penalize you.
They will penalize you.
And this is the new reality. The party has got to take control of the party nomination process. That is what we're talking about here. And they have set out a very strong framework on how they're going to do that because it is our long-term responsibility to ensure that a Republican wins in November, whatever candidate is that.
We have spent this entire first hour talking about the procedure and the politics and the personalities. I want to switch gears a little bit, and again, we'll get into more of it in the second hour, but I want to talk about some issues and whether or not in a campaign there can be, and again, this would primarily be a debate within the Republican Party, but it's also, I think, indicative of a debate within the country, and that is whether or not there can be a good knockdown, drag-out debate about the role of the United States of America in the world. You can call it the isolationist debate. It's been brought up primarily this year by Rand Paul. There have been pot shots taken at him, even though he disagrees. He now thinks that Marco Rubio has been isolationist in some of the comments that he's made recently. But is a Republican primary a good place to debate not only for Republicans but for all Americans our role in society and in the world?
I think it's a conversation that we have to have. The world the last 6 years has gotten unbelievably more dangerous, and in huge part due to our abandoning our allies, supporting our enemies, refusing to engage places that we should have, and so on. I think it's a conversation that has to happen. Our politics don't stand on their own domestically. The role that we play globally is tremendous.
Tim, do you agree with that?
I do, and I think I do, but I think we have to watch and see how things play out, because in spite of everything he's done, the independent oil men who frack for gas and oil, getting together with Saudi Arabia, are completely changing the world right now. That whole countries are facing economic collapse within months. So what the world's going to be like in June, we don't know. And in spite of everything he did to make sure it wouldn't happen, Obama could preside over the collapse of a couple of our major enemies, Iran and even Russia. The governments could fall by the middle of this year because of the economic chaos.
Mark.
You know, it's definitely a debate we have to have, because right now Obama has made a mess of national security and our position within the world. This is a debate we need to have within the Republican Party, because there are a lot of leftist libertarians that are coming into the party that believe we should be isolationist. They don't believe in our policies regarding defending Israel, our ally, our only ally, strong ally in the Middle East, and the war on terror. And we need to shore that up within the Republican Party, that we are the party for the strong national security. You need a strong national security to defend freedom.
I have said on this program, and again, I think some of you may have heard it, I think that the unique thing about Rand Paul, which to me made 2014 the year of Rand Paul, is that he wasn't focusing exclusively on winning the Republican primary, because he said some things that probably wouldn't play well in a Republican primary. It's as if he's already going to the general election, but he is bringing into the discussion by saying certain things, and as you said, you heard him recently in Berkeley, he's saying things that Democrats and non-voters are saying. And I think he has the ability to expand that base. I want to hear from everyone's reaction to that when we go to hour number two. And I also want to expand the discussion about isolationists, the role of the United States in world affairs, and whether it will be world affairs and less economic issues and even social issues the next time we vote for President of the United States. Our guests in hour number one, they are so good, they will all be back for hour number two. Mark Viviades, Karen Sigmund, Charles Moran, and Tim Kelly, and I'm Bruce Dumont, live tonight from Westwood One Studios in Culver City, California. 1-800-723-8289. We will roll on after some network news. Back in about 8 minutes. Live from Los Angeles, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican and Navy veteran Tim Kelly, Charles Moran, chairman of the California Log Cabin Republicans, Karen Sigmund from the organization Rage Against the Media, and Mark Viviades, recently reelected as chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles. Our program tonight coming to you, as it will for the next several weeks, from the Westwood One Studios in Culver City, California, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you want to tweet us a comment, you can tweet at Dumo, at D-U-M-O, and the website beyondthebeltway.com. Well, we have callers that are standing by. Let's go to Sharon, who's been very patient, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS in Chicago. Go ahead, Sharon. Happy New Year to you.
Yes, hey, thanks for taking my call, Bruce. Love your program.
Thank you.
You know, the problem that I have with to go along, to get along, where you've got social liberalism combined with fiscal conservatism or vice versa, the two don't complement each other. They just don't go. Social, basically, liberalism is why we've gotten ourselves into the debt we're in, all these wonderful programs, and I'm being sarcastic. For example, Planned Parenthood is a B with $1 billion worth of, I guess, that it's being shoveled into them, kind of a liberal program where we basically provide birth control and now abortifacient and abortion services through Obamacare. So it's all of these wonderful things that they keep suckering the public into. Wouldn't it be nice if we were compassionate with this and that, and we stupidly vote for the people who go ahead and fund this stuff? So where is your fiscal conservatism? It goes up in smoke, and that's my comment.
Let's let Tim respond, because I think he identified himself as in that vein.
I think part of the problem is inertia. But if we look around in Wisconsin, Governor Walker showed that a strong executive and a Republican legislature can allow the defunding of an awful lot of the left's pet projects. And in the incoming Congress, one of the key things they have to do in the budget that they have to vote up by October 1st, the budget for the next fiscal year, is to get the shears out and remove as much of this Democratic Party patronage as possible. Let them pay for it themselves. Let them find it. We have not been able to do this in a long time. And finally, on the state level, in most states and in Congress, Republicans with the next budget can put a big hole in the Democratic gravy train, and they really should.
Thank you very much for your call. I want to kind of broaden the discussion. I mentioned it at the beginning of the broadcast, and that is, with the newfound collective power of the control of the Senate and House, literally days away, what should the Republicans be doing congressionally to react to the lame duck 2 years left of President Obama? And I want to start with you, Mark Viviades. What should they be doing with their power?
Well, for one thing, they should put a lot of bills through that have been stopped by Harry Reid in the Senate. For example, we haven't had a budget in years. So the Congress, the Republicans in Congress, should put a budget together, send it to the Senate, and then it's going to land on Obama's desk. And there are going to be a lot of bills. The Keystone Pipeline, that also is going to land on Obama's desk. It's going to be one of the first priorities of the Republican Congress. They're going to send that to the Senate, and it'll go to Obama's desk. And now we're going to see where the problem is with bills not passing. It's not the Republicans' fault, as the media and the left would have us believe. It's going to be put right on Obama's desk, and he's going to be the one stopping things from going through.
So inundate the president with legislation. Your reaction, Karen, is that a good strategy?
I think we do have to do that, but some of the legislation I'd like to see is things like repealing Obamacare in one fashion or another. I think we do need
You know the president's going to
absolutely
veto it. Just do it.
Absolutely, just
be on the record.
It's been the wrong thing all along. We haven't been strong enough against it. Now we should be as strong as we possibly can. This thing is a behemoth that is invading every single one of our lives. It's destroying our medical system, our insurance system. It's destroying jobs. The tentacles of Obamacare need to be ripped out.
Charles Moran, pick one particular fight or pick a lot of fights at the same time, and as Mark suggested, just inundate the president with items on the desk.
I think in larger, broader narratives, and my number one concern, and this has been the hallmark of the Obama administration for the last 6 years, is the gross overreach of the federal government into the personal lives of decisions of everyday people. And Obamacare was the hallmark of that, because it legitimately had the federal government telling you how to take care of yourself. That is a touchstone. There are a lot of touchstones that we've got to get out, and I think that needs to be the theme for what the Republicans need to be doing is focusing on dialing back this ridiculous overreach of the federal government. But also, they must, just for the sake of short-term goals, find something to do. I totally believe what Karen said. We are not going to be the party of no anymore. It's going to be the Obama of no, because he's going to have to veto. Harry Reid fell on that sword. He has been protecting the president for the last 6 years, and the Senate's paid for it. So now Obama's going to pay for it because he's going to have to say no. So the party of no narrative will no longer exist from the Republican parties, but we've got to be able to say this is something that we are going to get done, and if you continue to trust the Republicans past this next 2 years and hand us majorities in the Senate, the House, and give us the presidency back, we're going to radically transform America into what it should be and harness that energy.
Tim Kelly.
There's a couple of things that are easy, and that includes the trade legislation to liberalize trade that the unions blocked in the Senate. Mm-hmm. That's got to go through, and Obama definitely wants it. The other thing Obama wants is the infrastructure bill for roads and bridges and so forth. And that is a Christmas tree that goes sailing through Congress, you know, like an elephant on fire. That'll go. And then on other things, we have to wait and see. The Supreme Court is as likely as not, and maybe even very likely, to gut Obamacare by June this year, at which point the whole thing is in collapse and everybody's got to go back to square one.
I wouldn't hold my breath on that.
You know, it's quite possible. It's quite possible.
What should they do on immigration?
Immigration, they should collect about half a dozen bills in the various areas. And if I wasn't back there, I would go directly to the Latino office holders and find out what they really want. Because what they really want and what is needed is not necessarily what we're reading about in the papers. And handle each of the segments in a separate piece of billing and get a good majority for it and then send them down in line to the president. Temporary industrial workers, high-tech workers, agricultural workers, what the quotas for legal immigration are going to be. Set ground rules for how people who have gotten amnesty and it can't be taken away, what is the procedure for them to proceed eventually to citizenship?
Is there going to be agreement on that? Can there be Republican agreement on what that plan needs?
Well, you know, Tim made a fantastic point. Who said we have to have comprehensive immigration reform? Whenever you have comprehensive anything, there'll be all kinds of stuff in that bill that most people don't want. We need a separate bill on every single item, as Tim mentioned, including one on securing the fence, one on legal immigration, etc. And then we vote on each one based on the merits of that one bill.
1-800-723-8029. When we come back, it was the dominant discussion on virtually all of the Inside Beltway programs today. We are going to wait until segment 6 to discuss it this evening, and that is the future of Congressman Steve Scalise.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches? Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, back in Culver City. I've got to be retrained here. Culver City, I'm in California. It's 12 degrees in Chicago. It's like maybe 60 degrees here. And everybody's got their coat on because it's too cold out here. But anyway, it's nice to be in Culver City tonight. Dominating virtually all of the Sunday shows that I saw today, there was a discussion of Steve Scalise, a member of the House Majority Republican leadership, who is being criticized for attending a white supremacist group 12 years ago and giving a speech to them. And it has been a big brouhaha inside the Beltway. So let me turn to our president of Rage Against the Media and talk about, is there pure party building? Is there any reason why Steve Scalise is in the way of moving forward with the party and the rebranding of the party now? Should he step aside just for the good of the party for any reason?
I think the media did latch on to this because anytime a Republican does anything that they can point to in any way as negative, they're going to do it. I think us kowtowing every time the media gets all in a tizzy is a mistake. We've done it too long. What did the media do when Senator Obama, it had been found that he went to a church where for 20 years he was told all kinds of anti-American rhetoric, the chickens have come home to roost and so on. Nobody made Obama step down. At a certain point, we need to stop being held hostage to the slander from the media. It was 13 years ago. The facts have already been distorted. He didn't speak to this group. He spoke next door, so on and so forth. It was 13 years ago. We really need to stop being held hostage to whatever the media wants.
Yeah, I agree with Karen. There's no proof that he was actually at that meeting. He may have been at the same hotel, but even if he was, he's not the one who schedules his speaking engagements. And if he went to speak at that group, he was speaking not at all about their agenda. He was talking about how to govern and what he wanted to do in office and so forth. So, again, this is just a way the media has to grab on
but
to
does
him.
He, but does he hurt the strategic plan of where the party wants to go, Charles?
No, and I think in the long term, all this does is expose the fact that the Democrats, all they have to latch on to is race baiting and inequality, income inequality, race inequality. That's all the left has left in its playbook. And that's why the story means something is you've got a white man who's a Republican who went and spoke about taxation issues to a group of people who, you know, were purported white supremacist group, whatever. The fact of the matter, this is the Democrats keep going back to this because they can't build anything outside of bringing somebody together in unity. They just got to tear down and shove those wedges in between people. And that's part of the Democratic playbook. And when you see things, you know, Mia Love, who's our newly elected Republican member of Congress, you know, has said this is a non-issue. When Steve Scalise's African-American counterparts who serve with him in his own delegation say, I have never seen
Democrats
who have said, I have never seen this man give any kind of racially discriminatory words or treat anybody differently. When you have that, all you know that this is just a farce. It's just a farce, and you know we're falling for it even just for talking about it.
Jim Kelly,
this is a typical Democratic Party rules for radicals hit on a very very little known Republican, at least outside of his district. I'm not familiar with him at all. I mean, the same thing could have happened to the mid-level White House staffers who partied with the Secret Service men and the local girls down in Cartagena when Hillary was down there for a big meeting.
The one thing the media does not do, and again, Newt Gingrich was on Face the Nation, and I think he hit it out of the ballpark. He doesn't talk about the tremendous power and position within the Democratic Party that the late Robert Byrd of West Virginia attained, being the head of the Appropriations Committee, Senate pro tem before he died. This guy was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. He didn't go to a meeting of whites. He was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Hugo Black, appointed to the Supreme Court by a Democrat, was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. So, I mean, you really have a good example of a double standard. And everyone hailed, what a great public figure, Bobby Byrd was for umpteen years, you know, for over 50 years serving in Congress. So it's a little bit, but again, because the news media can control the debate, they can control the discussions, and they controlled much of the discussions this morning. But we're moving on to other issues at the moment. I do want to talk about one mistake that I think victors in elections make, and that is they misread the election results. How do you read the results of last November, Mark?
It is a totally the American public saw what a failure Obama was, and this was mainly a vote against the Obama administration and the Democrat Party. And instead, Obama sees his numbers creeping up a little bit, and he thinks it means that the American public are totally with him. And it has nothing to do with him. The economy's getting a little better. Again, nothing to do with him. And he's reading that wrong. He's reading the results of the election wrong. This basically was a huge victory for the Republican Party and the policies that the Republicans want to push.
Tim, how do you see the election results?
I see it as a complete rejection of the Obama economic policies in particular. That we have a minor recovery going on, and it's good for the wealthy, the very wealthy. But it hasn't done much of anything for other people. And this Congress and the state legislators and governors that Republicans have now, what they have to do is make sure that we get prosperity flowing back to the people. At this stage, we should be at a 4-5% annual growth rate, and we're not. I went to a college football game yesterday and sat with two recent graduates, guys who graduated last June. They're both working in what I would call dead-end jobs, and both of them are going to get advanced degrees because in their trained area, there's no work right now. This is in California. So this economy needs to be kicked, and that's what the people want, regardless of party, regardless of age or region. That's what they want.
How did you read it, Charles?
The election was definitely a repudiation of what I believe, again, was federal government overreach. I think people sat there. They saw what happened with Obamacare. They saw what happened with NSA spying, which I know started under some Republicans. But this was a reaction of saying, stop. Just stop. And through that, I really do want to pick up on what Tim said, is the Obama attempt to correct income inequality has only exacerbated income inequality. And I, being a 34-year-old and the youngest person on this panel, I do see too many people.
He always stakes that in, you know.
I'm not just graduating from college. I'm 10 years out from that now. But watching my friends trying to buy houses is an excruciating problem. And we had a course correction from the economic crash. But we have not done anything to enhance opportunity. And Obama's been railing against income inequality and racial inequality. Where has been increasing opportunity? And there's been none of that. And that's where Republicans have a key. And we must address that in the next 2 years. Addressing it, increasing opportunity for everyone.
One of the things that the national news media, when they gave their instant analysis about what happened, they said that voters said, a pox on both of your houses. We don't like the fighting and bickering. We want something done in Washington. Now, I haven't heard that from any of our Republicans tonight, but that is sort of the collective inside the Beltway media response.
Of course it is, because it's very difficult to face the complete repudiation. As we've all been saying,
you
that's exactly
like
what
like?
It was. I know. So, right? Isn't this what we heard out of the media and out of Democrats? What the voters really said is they want bipartisan support of this, that, and the other thing. That's completely ridiculous. That is not what we the voters said at all. At every opportunity that we actually had, we said no to all the Democrat policies, all the huge overreach that
on the other side of this. Now, I asked about what the Republicans are. If you're the president of the United States and you've just had your butt handed to you and you've got 2 years to go and you never have to go to the voters again and you still can raise money whenever you want it, why didn't you spend the last 2 years with executive orders and doing all kinds of things just to make you more well loved by your base? What's wrong with that?
That's exactly what he's doing.
And the problem is
there anything wrong with that?
Oh no, there is a problem with it, because that's not
Republicans
how you
want to do the same thing.
No, the Republican who didn't want to do the same thing was a man named Ronald Reagan. So he figured out a way to do it. But you know what? That requires hard work. Ronald Reagan was a smart man. He knew the way to preserve, these final 2 years and ensure that he was going to get something done. Oh, Barack Obama, he's amateur. It's amateur hour in the
Barack
White House.
Obama,
These are a bunch of idiots who are running the administration. They're a bunch of thugs.
But he signed the immigration reform.
The immigration reform he signed, like everything else, it's halfway.
Yeah.
It only
just enough to make the Hispanics love him.
No, just enough to piss him off when they find out
when it's all
that it's a
he'll
con.
Be long gone. But
there's no, there's absolutely no delivery system with this.
It's lazy. These executive orders are nothing but laziness. He has to get in and get in the muscle and get in the game, and his head's never been in the game. He disdains Congress. He disdains the policy. He's, you know, we have a professor here, so I'm not gonna I'm not gonna slam the academic community here. But he's lazy. He doesn't want to get his hands dirty. He doesn't want to build those personal relationships. He surrounds himself with yes
men.
But
that's not the only reason. He had an agenda when he came to the presidency. He pushed it through in Obamacare, and now even if he doesn't have the Congress and the Senate, he's going to continue to try to get his agenda items through.
In the next segment, we're going to ask all of our guests to come out of their shells a little bit and tell us what they really think. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Now in our 35th year on the air, this is Beyond the Beltway Tonight, live from Westwood One Studios in Culver City, California.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us on our first broadcast of 2015, talking tonight about the future of the Republican Party. And again, I want to spend a moment to welcome a new affiliate to the Beyond the Beltway Network this evening, News Talk 730 KLOE in Goodland, Kansas. Will Sterrett, operations manager of Rock and M Radio, is putting together a great new talk station, and we're delighted to have them as part of our, they're carrying us in the Mountain Time Zone. So again, we welcome everyone listening tonight on News Talk 730 KLOE. We hope that every Sunday night will be part of your listening pleasure. And also a reminder for those listening on our flagship station, WLS Radio in Chicago, this program generally is both a radio and a television show. For the next several weeks, we will be separating the radio show from the TV show. It's not going to be the same show. So this evening and for the next 8 weeks, my good friend Dan Miller will be sitting in on the television version of Beyond the Beltway, which will air midnight on WYCC Television, TV 20, and also on the Comcast cable systems. And he'll be focusing on the race for mayor of Chicago and the municipal elections and the new governor of the state of Illinois, the governor-elect, Bruce Rauner. And so he'll be focusing on that. That'll be a live, fresh show. And again, you can tune that in at midnight, and we will continue with our national version of our broadcast for the next several weeks, live from Westwood One Studios in Culver City, California. We have a great panel around the table this evening. They have all been with us before, and they were so good, we've invited them back. And we will ask them now to introduce themselves to the audience, and we begin with Mark Viviades.
Yes, I'm chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County. I've been an activist for years, both in Massachusetts and here in California, and also very closely associated with the Hollywood Republicans website, HollywoodRepublicans.com.
Karen Sigman.
I run an organization called Rage Against the Media. You can find us at RageAgainstTheMedia.org. I've been involved in politics for too long a time as well, and I'm a member of a number of Republican groups.
Charles Moran.
Charles Moran. I'm the chairman of California Log Cabin Republicans. You can learn more about our organization at logcabin.org. If you want to find my personal Twitter account, which I should use more, and is also one of my 2015 resolutions, my handle is OXYCHAZ, OxyChaz, stuff from my college days.
Okay. Tim Kelly.
Yeah, I'm retired, native Californian and a veteran from Vietnam wartime. I'm trying to write more and more, and I will be setting up. I attempted to set up blogs, and I will be setting up a blog, actually two blogs, one dealing with current affairs and the other dealing with California and California food and history.
And where do they go?
I don't.
You don't know yet.
I don't know yet.
Well, next time you're on, we'll give it and we'll get you some business. There are a couple of names. We've got some tweets on from people who have said that we were conspicuous by not mentioning a few people. And I want to mention some names. Ben Carson. Ben Carson is one of those who has been touted by the media. The media likes to sort of pick Republican candidates from time to time. And anyone want to say anything about Ben Carson? Will he be good for the process if indeed he gets in? Charles, you look like you're chomping at the bit to say something about the good doctor.
I do believe that Ben Carson will run. I think there's a strong draft movement behind him. I do not think he will go anywhere or do anything. He is being pushed by people who like who he is and where he is, not necessarily for what he stands for. And some of the comments that have come out of his mouth are just completely opposite of anything that would pass a smell test in a Republican primary. And if I had to, and I didn't get to this, and I do want to say this, if I had to narrow down the four candidates or slots that exist, I would say Jeb Bush, Rand Paul, a social conservative, I don't know who that is, and a populist GOP figure. If I would narrow down who are the four candidates or those slots that exist that are going to be really the four major ones, it's going to be those four. It's going to be those two individuals and then those two roles. So they'll be of the total of four.
Would you agree that the 2014 Rand Paul was able to sort of get one of those spots because of what he said and where he went?
I think the issues that Rand has brought forward are speaking to this generation of millennials, of people. Granted, they're not registered Republicans, and if you're not registered anything, I don't really care about you. And if you're not a registered Republican, I think I worry less about you and your vote. At the end of the day, Rand does have this ability to tap into a segment of the voters or interested people who have not been ministered to by the Republican Party in a lot of ways. And we need those people back. But through that process, we need to educate them and we need to work with them to understand, you know, that you can't stick your head in the sand and be a conservative. You can be a strong conservative and worry about personal protection rights, but also be strong on foreign policy issues. And we're going to have to, you know, this is going to be the continuing education of Rand Paul and his people. But you cannot underestimate that. He is going places other Republicans haven't. He is comfortable discussing issues that other Republicans aren't. And he is attracting voters and Republican or, well, voters and interested people in ways that other Republicans aren't. So we need to recognize that.
Tim Kelly, you have you want to elaborate on that, do you not?
I was thinking.
You're talking about your daughters and her friends?
My daughter and her friends and the younger people, the millennials. He talks to them in a language that they understand. And most of these people are not committed to a party. So it's very very important. In California, neither party, the Democratic Party is in the high 40s. The Republicans are in the low 30s. And the nonpartisan registrations keep on growing. So we're coming closer and closer to a situation where party is not that important. Most states now have open primaries, and I expect all primaries to be open primaries soon. So the old-fashioned politics doesn't work. That doesn't work anymore.
I said in the last segment that almost Rand Paul last year seems to be running for a general election, not focusing on the Republican primary because he wants to sort of expand the base. And if you look at what Bill Clinton was able to do in 1992, he expanded the base. He won the nomination by expanding the base, and it seems to me that Paul is doing a little bit of that.
Right.
And I think the other question about what Paul is doing, and this, I generally am not a believer in electoral conspiracy, where members of one party decide to enter the primary of another to either vote for someone they really like or someone who they think is going to be weak, but absent a strong Democratic primary, given the fact that Rand Paul is saying things, as you said, primarily in the criminal justice field and in some libertarian drug-related issues, not typical Republican points that would do well, certainly in the country club Republican party. I'm wondering whether or not there could be a move in which large numbers of African Americans, absent a Democratic primary, would find Rand Paul to be a Republican who is saying things and speaking out to them like no Republican has ever done.
I don't think so. I think Rand Paul has limited he's only going to get so far. He's got a very dedicated group of followers that migrated from Ron Paul. And these people are almost rabid in how much they follow him and how much they believe in him. And therefore, he's going to be in it for a long time. He's going to be there. But he's not
like his father was.
Like his father, but he's
never
only going
to give up.
Right, but he's only going to reach a certain point of popularity, and he's not going to go any farther than that.
And I don't believe he has the market on speaking to these constituencies. And I brought this up before. Mm-hmm. We've got to start talking about increasing opportunity. And we talk about, how are we going to fix the criminal justice system? And how are we going to, go into the urban communities and talk about, why African-Americans are getting arrested at a disproportional rate and why the incarceration levels are so high? Well, if you don't have anything to do and there are no opportunities for you to go to a job, this is really glib and I probably shouldn't even say it, but a lot of these protesters, if they had to go to work at 8 a.m. the next morning, they would not have been out marching on the 110 freeway at 10:30 at night or 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, the best way to impact social change is to be employed and to have a job and to be able to contribute your money to the areas you want to. If these problems will address themselves if we address the issue of creating opportunity.
But also on the issue of criminal justice, which is what Rand Paul has gotten most of his publicity for, it also going into African American churches and talking about the disparity of sentencing. He is not alone in that. If you turn back the clock about 8 years ago, those were some things that Mike Huckabee was talking about. Those are things that Rick Perry has talked about. You look at the area of criminal justice, one of the most progressive states in criminal justice reform is Texas. And it happened under Rick Perry. Now, granted, they do, capital punishment is still alive and very well in Texas. But if you look at some of the other issues of criminal justice, Rick Perry is one of the most progressive governors in the country on those issues which Rand Paul talks about.
Right. So, again, this goes back to the fact that we're not going to have that nobody's going to own this. And I think all Republicans, we need this as a brand. We need all Republicans to get involved and start talking about these inner city issues. Why is it that we are leaving? We have now had cradle to grave government in some of these African American communities for three generations. They don't know anything else. What are we going to do to break that cycle? And it's not shove a Bible down their throat or, as in Mike Huckabee would do, or, increase charity, or what, Rick Perry would be state-forced and sponsored, enforcement of some of these welfare-to-work programs. But really, what are we doing to give people hope that they actually have a chance to influence their destiny?
And it's not increasing the minimum wage.
It's not, it's employment opportunities.
Jeb Bush would say education.
And that's... Everybody's got a piece of that pie. Everybody's got a piece of that.
But education, unfortunately, for the Republicans, never becomes a vital issue in a national campaign. It should be, but it seems to me that it's an opportunity. It's an issue that the Republicans have just never touched because they're so vehement against having a national Department of Education, they can't talk about it in a national election, but they should. Back shortly from Culver City, I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City. Let's go to Steve listening to us in Milwaukee on WLS Radio. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, I would like to know if any of your panelists would consider Scott Walker a viable candidate.
I think we did earlier in the broadcast.
Definitely.
I think everybody
definitely.
Said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, definitely. I mentioned that. He would be a fantastic candidate. He's got great credentials. He's got a great great accomplishments in his state. He just has to be a little more dynamic. He has to learn to really speak to the crowd and reach out to the crowd.
And so he's from a blue state.
Yeah.
Or in the last presidential election.
Right, right.
Many.
Yep.
Tell us about him. You must love him.
I, for selfish reasons, I don't want him to run because I feel his work here is undone.
Hmm. Okay.
But, I agree he has a lot of national appeal, but I also agree he needs to be a little bit more dynamic.
Yep, that's the big rub against him right at the moment. But thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it. In the time remaining, we have talked about the Republican field. Let us take a moment to talk about 2016. A little bit earlier in the broadcast, there was some reference that maybe Hillary Clinton is not the candidate. That was certainly Charles Moran's thought. Tim Kelly, you are one of those who thinks Hillary is running.
I think she is running. I don't necessarily think that she's going to get it. You know, we saw her in exactly the same position 8 years ago on the run-up to the 2008 election. And as we discussed, she has an organization. Basically, you just flip the switch and they all come in the money comes in and so forth. But is she physically up to it? And is she the politician that they hoped she is? I wonder.
What do you think, Karen?
I wonder.
I've been saying for a while, I don't think she's going to run. I think it won't necessarily be entirely her choice. I think her book tour really was sort of a dry run to see how well she'd be received, and she was received extremely badly. She spoke to...
Is she doing a disservice to the party then by flirting?
I think she is doing a disservice to the party by flirting. I think she'll do a much bigger disservice if she actually says she will run. I think she's going to use being a new grandmother as her way out, but I think pressure is going to be put on her to not even enter.
Mark, you think she's doing it?
I think she's definitely going to run, although I think as it gets closer to the primaries, if her numbers start going down and she's not in the first or second position, she's going to back out at that point. But for right now, she wants it. Her husband wants it, and she's the one to beat in the Democrat Party.
Charles. I want to jump in here. I think Hillary Clinton, to say it best, is a 20th century solution to a 21st century problem. I don't think she's going to do it. I think the Democratic Party has moved on. The Democratic Party is the party of Elizabeth Warren. It's the party of Andrew Cuomo. I think it's the party of Martin O'Malley. I think the party of Brian Schweitzer. There are a number of qualified Democrats who can pick up this mantle. You know, this whole ready for Hillary buildup. Again, I'm a consultant here. That's just an excuse to raise a lot of money from a lot of rich donors and get a lot of consultants put on payroll because they can't do anything now that Obama's done.
By the way, I don't think there's any way Elizabeth Warren will ever be the nominee, at least in this round. She's really been the one everybody names, but she's got absolutely no experience and no accomplishments.
But her message is
that
resonating.
That doesn't necessarily hurt you in a Democratic primary.
But exactly. But the thing is, her message is resonating. Yeah. Part of that, this is so brilliant, is it's the complete opposite of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is beloved by Wall Street. She's she's more of a hawk than Rand Paul is. She's better on Israel than Rand Paul is. She's better on foreign affairs than Rand Paul is. But, you know, so she's the complete antithesis. And this would absolutely throw the Democratic Party. I mean, man, the
what
worst.
What is keeping her from running then? Because what I'm hearing you say is she's the one that everybody's bouncing off the walls
because about. The infrastructure and the people around them are because they're so desperate because, you know, the Democrats love to sit on the dole. They know that they can raise the money, that it's going to be really easy, quote unquote, to run this Hillary Clinton campaign. But it's not going to happen. They're going to actually have to go out there and do real legwork like they did with Obama. They're going to have to do that again. And again, it's these people who came up through the Obama cycle. You've got some Pumas, which are – party unity, my bleep. Those were the Hillary Clinton supporters who never got over and never went over to Obama. You've got those people who have been sitting patiently
for
6 years ready to do this. And but like you said, Hillary is not, you know, she's older.
She's not the leftist for the Democrat Party in the primary, but she's the one the Democrat strategists would win the general election.
But the strategists aren't the ones, you know, the Democratic setup is different, but it's the Democratic Party. We have closed primaries for president, and it is
We have less than 2 minutes left, okay? And earlier in the broadcast, you went through, Charles, your four team, the 14
playoff. The Magic Four.
The Magic Four, the top four, the final four. Right now, and again, we're going to save this tape, right at this moment, or again, we're 2 years away from inauguration, who will be the Republican nominee in 2016, Mark? You can only pick one name.
Oh,
one
man.
Name.
Because it's
between... Your entire future is on it.
It's between, I think, not that I want these people, no, I think it's between Chris Christie and Jeb Bush.
But who is it?
Chris Christie.
Chris Christie. Okay. Karen Sigmund.
I'm going to throw out Bobby Jindal, just to be hopeful.
Bobby Jindal.
Yes.
Okay. That's a long shot.
Yes.
You'd get a lot of money in Vegas on that one. Charles Moran. One name.
Jeb Bush.
Tim Kelly.
Christie.
Christie, yeah. Two out of four for Christie.
Yeah.
Wow. That surprises
it's
me.
It's that dynamic personality. That's what people are looking for.
He's a dynamic personality. And will his weight be an issue? I'm serious.
He'll lose some more weight.
Huckabee, Christie, Jeb, they're all going to drop 40 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, Huckabee's done it before.
Weight Watchers is the only safe stock bet you can get coming out of this
weight
election.
Weight an issue with Jackie Gleason? No, I don't think it would be with Chris Christie.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I will forget that I met him at the In-N-Out Burger a couple of months ago in Sherman Oaks, California. Our thanks this evening to our guests, and they have been terrific guests representing the future of the Republican Party, or at least discussing it. Mark Viviades, he's the chairman of the Los Angeles County Republican Party. Karen Sigmund, she is the organizer of Rage Against the Media. Charles Moran is the chairman of the California Log Cabin Republicans. And Tim Kelly is a veteran of the U.S. Navy, 7th Fleet in Vietnam. We thank you for your service and also a longtime activist in Republican Party politics. Our thanks also to Denise Dumont listening to us in New Jersey this evening. So she was probably very pleased with the response about Chris Christie, totally unprompted by this reporter. Anderson Cowan, Ted Woods, Colin Bobbitt and Todd Nebel, I'll get my mouth to work. They all helped make this program possible, and it was a little bit difficult this evening, but they did a wonderful job. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with Westwood One. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Culver City, California.